So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Reverend Simon Ruth. I am a freelance minister, and one of the things I do here is I do the music for you guys because I love you. And Reverend Pam, this is her church. She's away in Scotland visiting the sacred island I used to live on. And it happens to be the time of the feast day for St. Francis. It was on Thursday. So after church, I'm going to bless people's pets. 2 years ago, I got to do this, and it was perhaps the cutest day of my life because Johnny bought all his puppies. And Anne, you brought your cats, and it was just gorgeous. So if you want to, after the service, go home and get your animals, bring them back. I will bless them with as much tenderness as I have. Last Sunday, I talked about St. Columba of Iona. And this Sunday, I'm going to talk about St. Francis. I'm talking about these two saints because they are the two saints that are most important to me, that inform my life and that I pray with. I don't just have icons because they're over there and they're pretty and I look at them and, oh, isn't that nice? I actually use the saints in my life and my spiritual practice. And the two that I do that most with are St. Francis, who's on my guitar. I have an icon of St. Francis on my guitar. And the other one, St. Columba. So in a nutshell, St. Francis is a beautiful expression of the Christ that inspires me to get over my prejudice towards Christianity and find that baby sitting in the bathwater. He's everybody's favorite saint. He's the most popular saint that there is. He's also the first person who, other than Jesus, that ended up with the stigmata. He's an unusual guy. He's authentic, joyful, compassionate, and happy. And he's a great example of the happiness that happens when you live close to God. Unlike Columba, his love was poverty, right? So Columba, if you remember, he got banished. He created a battle. There were 3,000 people that died. Everything in Columba's life was outside. In St. Francis's, it's a very quiet inner process. And Columba had royalty, he had money, he had coracles, he had connections. St. Francis has nothing. He gives everything away. And for poverty for him means to share every single thing that he has, to give everything away, and be so centered and available to God's call in every moment. Doesn't have to pay a mortgage or look after kids or do anything other than respond to God in the moment. And if anybody's ever been on pilgrimage, that is an amazing time. It's an amazing time. And him being married to, he calls her Lady Poverty, brings him such joy. And I was thinking about this. So I love to play for people when they're sick or on their deathbeds. It brings me incredible sense of purpose because I've surrendered my life to be a sacred musician. And in that moment, I am at a place where God is so close and it brings me great joy. And I imagine for St. Francis, being married to Lady Poverty, to share everything, brought him tremendous joy because he knew that the way he was devoting his life was being used. So it's kind of hard to get that understanding, but that was a core principle in his life. How do I know St. Francis? Well, you know, I've never met him in real life, and I've never had a vision of him either. I just feel like I know him, and I think we all do. We have a sense of who he was. We just kind of know. I'm going to sing my prayer of St. Francis, because I think this is where my relationship with him started, on this guitar, a long time ago. I wrote this song. There's too many things up here. Let me go over here. So I'm going to rewind. In 2006, I went to live in a modern-day abbey, and they had a shop, and they had postcards of the prayer of St. Francis. And I, as somebody who did not grow up in Christianity, had never seen the prayer of St. Francis before, and I thought it was fantastic. But it had a lot of religious words in it that I didn't like, because I don't really like religious language. Is that true for most of you? Yeah. So I rewrote it into this. And then I started singing it over and over again. And I think it changed me. I think this song is responsible for all the transformation that happened that was difficult. Lord, make me a channel of your peace. Grant that I can see through my human pain and still feel loved. In the darkness, let light be found, and there, I need light to find me here. Lord, make me a channel of your peace. We all need to learn to forgive a few more hundred times. Melt our hatred, let love take root in our hearts. Make me a channel of peace in my life. And through my own pain and need, I can learn to understand. Reach through our sorrow. Let it be joy. Oh, let it be joy. One of my strong beliefs is that the knife of sorrow and pain carves out within us the capacity for joy and happiness. That's a core belief that I have, but that's not about St. Francis. Let's get back to St. Francis. So, in a nutshell, he's called St. Francis, it means the Frenchman, because his dad was in France when he was born. He was born in Italy in 1181, and his mother was French. His father was a rich merchant who sold cloth. And St. Columba was a spoilt little brat who grew up into a playboy who liked fancy clothes, he liked parties, he thought he was the bee's knees. And when he was 20, he went off and joined the military. You know, that was he wanted to be a knight. And he got taken prisoner for a year, and he got ill. And he came back, went off to fight another war, got ill again. And during that time of him being a prisoner, spending a lot of time alone, and probably seeing horrors, a slow inner transformation happened inside him. And he returned to Assisi when he was about 25, and he didn't fit anymore. He wasn't interested in the lifestyle of his friends and his family. And he goes on for 20 years to become a monk. And there's a whole load of amazing things he does, but I'm going to focus on what happened to him around his transformation. One of the things that happens is that a beggar comes to him at the market and asks for alms, and he runs after him and gives him things, and his father is very angry and beats him, and he starts to end up in conflict with his family. So he's away from home more, and one time he's alone in a ruined church praying, and he looks up at the crucifix, and it talks to him. And the crucifix says, "Francis, Francis, rebuild my church which is in ruins, as you can see." I can't find it on here, but that's what it says. "Francis, Francis, rebuild my church which is in ruins, as you can see." And here's where St. Francis is. One of the things I love about him is he's such a weirdo. Is that he just leaves everything behind and starts doing that. He goes to the priests and the authorities and says, "Give me money. God has told me, Christ has told me I have to rebuild this church that's in ruins." And nobody believes him because they think he's a nutter. He's let his family down, all sorts. So what he does is he goes and steals some cloth from his dad. Sells it to rebuild it. His dad finds out and is furious, drags him home, beats him and locks him up. His mum lets him escape. This would make a good television series, I think. His mum lets him escape and a big battle happens and his father ends up taking him to court. And in court, he denounces his family. And his father cuts him off from the inheritance. And he divorces his family at that point and becomes a nomad. He just wanders. Well, it is Italy, so it's pretty cushy and warm, right? But he's wandering around. And he does this for about 5 years, right? This is the part of the story about St. Francis that nobody tells you. For 5 years, he was despised as a nutter who wore a beggar's brown robe. This is why I'm wearing simple clothes today. He wore a brown robe with a string tied around it. That's why the St. Francis outfit is a fancy version of that. And I'm sure he smelled terrible. And what did he do at that time? He just started preaching. Nobody gave him the authority to. And sometimes he would go and wash pots in a monastery. And the rest of the time he just walked around on his own. And sometimes he walked around naked. He was really very strange and people really didn't like him very much. What I love about him and where he helps me is he is the holy fool. He is the same reason that the Quakers go into the maximum security prison and never ever get attacked. St. Francis teaches me about my fear, and he doesn't say, "Go out and face the world." He says, "You're completely safe. You're completely blessed. When you are doing sacred task, you are utterly safe." And that's how I've been in all sorts of really scary situations. Because of that knowing, which I think comes from St. Francis for me. And the other thing about St. Francis as the holy fool is he's just so authentic and strange that everybody can be themselves around him. Right? There's no need to put on, you know, he's weirder than you are. I try and mirror that in my youth work. I mean, there's some people here that see me do youth work. I'm just like myself. I'm just completely myself. And then the kids can be as weird as they need to be. So another thing I love about St. Francis is his abandon and awe. You know, I remember once I was walking down the street in Vermont and I bumped into my nephew and niece when they were about 9 and 6. And they just ran towards me. They just ran. They were like, "Uncle Simon." And they just ran. And I'll never forget the look on their faces. And shortly afterwards, my mum came to the airport and she ran towards me too. Not as fast, but... and that is one of my vows that I made, is mirroring that, which is, "I will run to meet you, beloved. I will run to meet you, God. If I think you're over there, I am going to go right there." That's one of my vows as a minister. And St. Francis does that. He doesn't wait to find out, "Was that crucifix really talking to me? Was I sleep deprived? Was I just making this up? Do I need to go to the doctors?" He goes, "Oh, I need to rebuild this church." He steals cloth and he does everything to rebuild it. And after he finishes that, nothing much happens. So he goes and rebuilds another one and another one. And then eventually he goes, "Oh, maybe I'm taking that message a bit too literally. Maybe we should find a way of being monks that rebuilds what Jesus taught. Maybe Christianity's got a little bit corrupted, and maybe there's a purer way." And he doesn't beat himself up for the fact that he rebuilt three chapels. He just goes forward. He's got this abandon, like a childlike quality that is just so beautiful. Last week I mentioned another saint called Saint Therese of Lisieux. Now she's more recent. She died quite young and she lived a very simple life. At 15 she went into a nunnery. And she's known for being very steeped in prayer and having a deep intimacy with God. And this is her words. Small things done with great love touch the world in ways that we cannot begin to understand. Small things done with great love. And I think the way that St. Francis managed to do that was that he took a really expansive heart and put a lens of praise on it. The world to him is beautiful. He talks about the living world is a mirror of God. That's what he said. And he relates to the natural world as beings. You know, it's sister moon and sister birds. He would preach to them. Supposedly they'd land on him. He, brother wolf, you know, that story is lovely because this wolf was terrorizing a village and everybody was terrified of it and he's not frightened of it. He goes up and talks to it and creates a deal that the villagers will feed it. And of course, what happens when you feed a ferocious beast? It's not hungry anymore and it stops being ferocious. But that's his lens of God is everywhere. And the quality of the divine is luminescence within the world around him. So not only is he being loving, he is seeing the world with an incredibly generous lens. And his lens and his measure for love is so much bigger than just a human love. I was reading some of his writings last night, and his theology and mine are not the same at all. He's really big on sin and impurity and the devil. Those things are not really high on my spiritual to-do list. But what he does have that I really, really love is this incredible attribute of seeing God through Christ Jesus, as he calls. He always, you know, God for him is absolutely through this person who assumed a Christ consciousness. And he's constantly emptying himself of his possessions and his thoughts and his needs so that he can be a vessel for that loving quality, because it's so beautiful for him, it makes him cry. You know, he wants to be that. So he looks out upon his life and sees praise and love everywhere, and then embodies that in everything that he does. I have to say that St. Francis is the best example of praise out there. I said this last time. He's the best example of gratitude overflowing and that transformative capacity of praise and love and what happened around him, miracles and healing everywhere. He really transformed because he took the time to clean and open the inner vessel of himself. Then he was able to be that transformative presence outside. Now, I think Columba did it the other way around. And he's bulletproof to ingratitude. You know, I don't ever imagine him saying, oh, what a horrible day. I think I'll just stay in bed. My skin's really itchy and sore. I just can't be bothered with Brother Antonio today. In a very real way, the world becomes what we see it to be. In a very real way, the world becomes what we see it to be. And what is our lens? St. Francis asks us, what lens are you using to see another and to see your life and to see this creation? And something else I love about St. Francis is there's no failure. I am not a failure. We are not failures. There's, you know, that 5 years where he didn't have any money and he was talking to birds and rebuilding chapels and everybody hated him. That wasn't a failure, it was just part of his story. And I don't think that he would have been able to have the humility and the joy and the selflessness later to touch thousands of people. He founded three orders, right? First of all, an order for monks, then for nuns, and then for lay people. There's 5,000 people in that lay order still now. I even thought about becoming a tertiary Franciscan. So those unsuccessful and potentially very unhappy years are part of what makes him be a loving presence. I want to talk about Pam for a second. Whenever I talk to Pam about who her teacher is and who her teachers were, who does she always say? Her brother Doug. Her brother Doug, who didn't speak, who was very learning disabled. And I know why, because when I was on Iona, we used to get visits from a community called L'Arche. And there was one person who used to come, I think her name was Fran, actually, and she couldn't talk, she couldn't do anything. She was a very gentle soul that needed to be housed somewhere else because it was too noisy. She was the most loving person I think that I've ever met. And she taught me that my worth is not in what I can do. It's got nothing to do with success or my abilities. I am a human being, not a human doing. So St. Francis inspires me to think about what is my barometer for a life well lived, because he does all these things that seem a little bit nutty, right? He does all these unexpected, unsensible things. And he makes me go, oh, it doesn't matter what you're doing, it matters how you're doing it. So the very last thing I want to tell you about the way that he inspires me is his heart is breathtakingly beautiful to me. Now, I know that he had a fixation with cleanliness and with taking communion and letting go of the wretchedness of self and bringing in a beautiful God self. He also was central to his teaching was to imitate Jesus Christ, to imitate that person and those behaviors so that you could be that channel too. Not just because Jesus was amazing and you have to worship him, but because there's this quality that he opened the door to that then you open the door to and then you share. There's an emerging quality to him that's really beautiful. And it reminds me of a core teaching from the Episcopalian Church. There's no room for fear in love. We love because we're loved first. We are loved. We receive that. We do our spiritual practice. We do our work to create a home for that loving presence. And then we reflect that back to God and creation. So just before I move on, I want to talk about some spiritual practices that St. Francis inspires. Notice God's presence and all things. Care for creation. I think he would be absolutely horrified by how we treat the environment and the greed in there. I think the way that we look at the Crusades and that stuff that he did, he would look at us and go, "What are you doing?" And he specifically teaches us about the environment that is a being or beings. It's not a thing. 2, go out of your way to meet the sacred. Run towards her and take the risk of being wrong, like him rebuilding the church. Don't sit on the fence doubting. If you think God is somewhere, go towards it and you will learn on the way. And the other thing that he teaches me is about take communion. It's really important that we as human beings make space within ourselves for God to dwell. And the way that he did that was communion. And I do that sometimes. I'll take some bread and wine and go up on a mountain and I'll remember the last night and break the bread and remember that beautiful human being and bring that close to my heart. So small things done with great love touch the world in ways that we can't begin to understand. Everybody loves St. Francis because he did just that, including his enemies. Even like he went to meet a sultan in the Crusades, there's a bloody battle going on, he crosses over, sneaks across to on the wrong side, meets the sultan, and they have a great time, and he stays there for a couple of days. And they think that that conversation and that relationship between him and the sultan is why the Franciscans were allowed into the Holy Land. And they're still there now. There's a big legacy in imitating St. Francis. So I'm going to end with this prayer, which I used last time as well. O divine Christ, you are within each of us. We are your temple. We are your body. If every wall should crumble and every church decay, we are your habitation. Nearer are you than breathing, closer than hands and feet, and ours are the eyes with which you, in the mystery, look out with compassion upon this world. Amen.